This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
We haven't talked to Mark Zuckerman in a while, but I always enjoy getting to talk to Mark Zuckerman. He's down in West Palm. Spring training's got another couple of days left, and they open up a week from yesterday against the Braves at home, coming off a 55-win season in 2022. Zuck, of course, covers the Nats. For Masson, you can follow him on Twitter at Mark Zuckerman, and he's got a Nats Chat podcast with our good friend Al Galdi that you can listen to wherever you get your podcasts. So, you know what? I actually want to start with this. What did you think of the World Baseball Classic, in particular the championship game?
I loved it. I mean, it was I've always loved the idea of the event. But I think in previous years, it didn't just quite live up to what it could have been, I think in large part because you didn't have a ton of the best star players there, certainly on the American side. This year, they got more of them to buy in and do it. You had games more in prime time, which was nice. And you had it set up, I think all along, everybody knew, boy, a USA-Japan final, how great would that be? And oh boy, what if that was Ohtani versus Trout? How would that work out? I mean, the fact that it actually came down to that for the final out of it in a 3-2 count, like I was talking about this with some guys in the clubhouse the other day. Other sports, you can often set it up so that your best player has the ball or has a chance at the end of the game and maybe one-on-one against the other team's best player. You can't do that in baseball. No. You're subject to the lineup, whoever's turn it is. So the fact that it actually did come down to that, the best player on one team, the other guy closing for his team, and their teammates on the Angels normally, it was just phenomenal. So I loved it. I do wish, and I understand why this probably won't ever happen. There are too many other logistical problems with it. I wish it was played in July. I wish they had an extended All-Star break and did it over 2 weeks in July, because I think you'd have even better competition. You'd have pitchers in mid-season form, and I think more people would watch when there's not as much else going on in the sports world. But short of that, I thought this was phenomenal, and it showed what this event can be.
I saw this stat the other day, which to me is just an incredible stat. When Trout swung 3 times and missed on that final at-bat, including the 3-2 full-count game winner, it was just the 24th time in 6,174 career plate appearances that he swung 3 times and missed.
Yeah.
That's astounding. I mean, I'm doing the math a little bit in my head here to try to figure out what even that percentage is. That's like, it's 0.3%, right? Something like that. In terms of plate appearances, it just never happens. And it was Ohtani who did it. And we could have, you know, obviously a whole show on talking about, Ohtani and the unicorn that he is. But let's talk about the Nats. Okay, 55 wins, pathetic season last year, horrible season. Everything indicates that another bad season is in store. They've got the lowest over-under win total in the National League. It's 61.5. It's just two games better than the A's in the American League. Their odds are the longest to win the National League pennant, second longest to win the World Series. They are universally picked to be a terrible team. Do you agree with that? And if so, what could change that where they could become competitive somewhat?
Yeah, I do think there is a scenario in which they could be more competitive than that. It's going to require a lot of things to go right. But I understand why that would be the general consensus going into the season. And I'm not saying I disagree with it because, on paper, this is a team that doesn't look like it's dramatically better than what we saw last year. The difference here, though, is you do actually now have, I was going to say six, but it's now five because of Cade Cavalli's injury, young players who should be building blocks to a winning team here in a couple of years. You didn't necessarily have that last year. So I think that is a big deal, that almost no matter what the record ends up being this year, if those five guys, and that's Josiah Gray, Mackenzie Gore in the rotation, and then Keibert Ruiz, Luis Garcia, and C.J. Abrams in the field, if those guys, by the end of the year, put things together and you say, okay, yes, they do look like they are part of this thing in the long term, then that makes this season a success in my mind, no matter what the record is. So I think there's that. But I do think there is still the possibility. They have a bunch of players. They went out and signed some free agents. They didn't spend much money at all, spent hardly anything. But Dominic Smith, Jamer Candelario at third base, Corey Dickerson in left field, these are guys with some track records of success coming off down years. If they have bounce-back seasons, that can suddenly change the look of things. If Joey Meneses is the real deal and is like an all-star player, which, you know, both for 2 months last year and in the WBC for Mexico, he looked like that, he might be. That changes the dynamic a little bit. The bullpen was quietly one of the better ones in baseball last year, and they've got most of them back. So that's, you know, potentially good. The rotation has to be better. It was the worst in baseball. And even though the Cavalli injury is terrible, I still think there is potential there for that to be at least marginally better than it was last year. And I think the defense is going to be better behind them, which makes the pitching staff better. So you put that all together, there is a scenario in which you could say, okay, it all comes together and then maybe kind of a feisty team that hovers around 500 or something like that. But the odds are it probably won't work out like that and they will still be the last place team.
I just want to make sure I'm right about this. All five of those players, you know, excluding Cavalli, which I'll ask you about here in a moment, Gray, Gore, Ruiz, Garcia and Abrams.
Abrams and Garcia, yeah.
They all came from the deals with the Dodgers and the Padres for Scherzer, Turner, and Soto, right?
All but Garcia. Garcia was homegrown. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. That's all right. Very good. So Cade Cavalli's injury. I mean, it's just it's a bad luck franchise when it's come to pitching injuries. But what is the forecast for this? What is the prognosis?
Well, he's out for the year with Tommy John surgery. He just had it the other day, unfortunately. And the shame of it is, it's been a little over a week now since he was making that start in Port St. Lucie against the Mets, and I'm there watching it, and he looked great. It was the best I'd seen him in person, probably the best I'd seen any Nats starter here in a while, dominating a Mets lineup that had some of their big names in there. And then all of a sudden, one pitch, he throws a changeup. He starts shaking his arm, kind of hunches over. You can tell he's in pain. They come out to check on him. And I had this sinking feeling. It reminded me so eerily of Steven Strasburg's last pitch as a rookie in Philadelphia in 2010. And he was dominating that night against a really good Phillies lineup and threw one changeup and it all went, you know, fell apart for him and tore his elbow ligament. So it's a crushing blow for him and for the team and for the reasons that, you know, you're trying to concoct to say that this could be a surprise year, it really hurts that. Now, that said, we know the track record for Tommy John surgery, especially in younger pitchers, is really good. It's over 90% recovery. And as tough as it is to lose him for this year, he comes back next year strong. you know, think back what I was saying about Strasburg. Okay, in 2010, he has late in that season, gets hurt. He misses most of 2011, comes back at the end of that year. And then in 2012, he's the ace of a team that won 98 games and won a division title. Now, a lot of other things have to go right for that, for this to happen. But if Cavalli's recovery goes well, there's still, I think, a decent chance that he is part of a good Nationals team in a couple of years. I don't think it has to necessarily delay their timeline for getting back into contention if everything else falls into place.
Just real quickly, fast forward, and let's just say Cavalli's part of that. What's the rotation, the pitching rotation, when they become a much more competitive and maybe a contending team? Let's call it 2025 at the earliest.
Yeah, I think that's probably the appropriate year. It's Cavalli, it's Mackenzie Gore, who's here now and looked great his last start, and it's Josiah Gray leading the way. And I think that's what was most exciting about the potential for this season, is those three young guys leading the way in the rotation. So it's those three. Now, beyond that, this is where I think it'll be fascinating to see what happens with ownership and the direction that the organization goes. They have other pitching prospects, and you hope that one or two of them does develop into something. But there's nobody that's like a slam dunk. He's on the cusp of joining the team, and you know this is another big name coming. Now, they could draft someone this year because they have the number two overall pick. If they were to use that on a college pitcher who's on a fast track to the big leagues, maybe he is a part of that in 2 years. But I think if everything goes the way it's supposed to go, they have good young position players. They have a bunch of outfielders that are on the way in the next year or two. If you are ultimately going to spend some money in free agency, it's probably going to be on a starting pitcher. Are they going to be in a position, whether it's the Learners or somebody else who owns them by then, are they going to be in a position to go spend money on a big-name starting pitcher free agent? I think that'll be the big question that comes down the road.
We're talking to Mark Zuckerman, focused on this year's pitching rotation. Is there any hope that Patrick Corbin ends up being better than he's been here in the last few years or not? I know he's had a couple of promising starts in spring training. Just give me an update on him.
Yeah, there's hope because, I mean, you can't imagine him being any worse, right? I mean, last year, 19 losses and an ERA over 6, and I think he was the first in the majors in like 20 years to do that. So he's got to be better, right? That's what they keep telling themselves. I think two reasons. One, he has done some things with his mechanics to try to get his arm angle in a better place to make the fastball and the slider, those are his two pitches basically, look more like each other and come in down in the zone. And that's what he was successful at in the past, is a pitch would look like a fastball at the knees, guys would swing at it, and then it turns out it's a slider and it darts down in on them and they can't lay off in time. So mechanically, he seems to be in a better place. And then the second part is they're going to have better defense behind him, especially in the infield. He was hurt last year to some extent by having, you know, Alcides Escobar or Luis Garcia at shortstop, Michael Franco at third base. C.J. Abrams is going to be an elite shortstop. That helps a lot. I think Jamer Candelario is better at third. Garcia is better at second. And Dom Smith is a good first baseman. So if you just turn some of those batted balls in the outs, I do think it makes a difference. I'm not going to say he's going to return to his 2019 form, but I think there is some optimism that he can be at least, you know, an average big league pitcher, which in this case, I think is a huge win for them if he can do that.
Who's the starting opening day pitcher? How's it lining up?
We are going to officially find that out today, but it has lined up to be Corbin all along. And as demoralizing as that might sound, that you're going to give a guy who was the worst pitcher in baseball the opening day start, here's what I would say. This is not an indication from the Nationals that they believe he is their best starter. I think they do view Gore and Gray as being better, and probably Trevor Williams as well, the other free agent they picked up. But you don't want to throw a young guy out in that spot. Gore hasn't even pitched for the Nationals yet. He's pitched for the Padres last year, but this will be his Nationals debut. Gray is still a young guy they, you know, have high hopes for. Do you need to throw that extra weight at them of saying, okay, you're our number one guy opening day against the Braves, who are really good, by the way, go get him. I think it's more of a sign of, hey, let's let the veteran handle this. It may go well, it may not go well, but after that day, it doesn't really matter who's considered the number one and we'll try to take the pressure off the younger guys because they're the future and they're more important in the long run.
All right, give me the rest of the starting lineup, the projected starting lineup when we get to opening day. Obviously, we know Abrams is at short, Ruiz is behind the plate, Garcia is at second. Help me with the rest of the lineup.
Yeah, Dom Smith at first base, pickup from the Mets coming off a down year. I like him as a bounce-back candidate. He's very good defensively. He's had a good spring. Jamer Candelario at third base, they got from the Tigers. 2 years ago, he led the American League in doubles, 42 of them. So they're hoping, again, bounce back. Corey Dickerson in left field, longtime veteran. You know, he's not going to wow you, but he's been there, done that. You know, the solid veteran, clubhouse influence type. Victor Robles is still in center field. Yep. He's actually had a great spring. Does that mean it's going to change anything when the season starts? I don't know. He's certainly had more than enough opportunities, but he's still there and he's still going to play good defense. Lane Thomas in right field. He hit 17 homers last year, and then Joey Meneses is your DH. Now, what's interesting here is they can move guys around both in positions, and the batting order could go a lot of different ways. Davey's been tinkering with some stuff here in the last week of camp. They're not going to hit for a lot of power. There isn't one guy on that team that I can guarantee you is going to hit 15 homers this year, probably Meneses, unless he's a total bust. But I do think they're going to hit for contact a lot. They're preaching the idea of hitting the ball up the middle into the gaps, hitting a lot of doubles, and they're going to have to be smarter on the bases, not run themselves into outs, because they're going to have to manufacture runs to score this year. They can't just rely on home runs.
Finnegan's the closer?
Finnegan's, I'm going to call him the bullpen ace, whatever that means. If the other team's middle of the order is due up in the eighth inning, Davey's going to put him there and use somebody else in the ninth. So it's not necessarily a closer. And I actually like that strategy. He did it at times last year. But between Finnegan, Carl Edwards Jr., Hunter Harvey, who looked really good when he was healthy last year, I think they've got three guys who can pitch at the back end and be effective. And there's some depth even behind them. The bullpen is kind of secretly a pretty good strength for them. And if they can just get five or six innings from their starters, I actually think it sets up well for them. The problem last year is the starters averaged fewer than five innings, and so the bullpen was just overworked, and it was a lot to ask of them.
All right, three quick ones to end. Number one, will we ever see Steven Strasburg pitch again?
I unfortunately don't think so. Nothing's been official yet, but you reach a point here where it's just not happening, and there's only so many things left to try to do. It's his right. He's under contract for another 4 years. If he wants to keep trying to rehab and figure this thing out, his right. But I think they've kind of moved internally to the idea that he's probably not going to pitch for them again. It's really sad.
Number two, how many wins in 2023?
I'm going to see a slight improvement. I'll say they get right around the 100 loss marks, about 62 wins. And again, that doesn't mean it's an unsuccessful year if the young guys look like they are legit.
62, by the way, would be just barely over the total number, which is 61.5. Lastly, real quickly, I got 15 seconds. What's the state of the sale of the team, if there's even a state anymore?
Stagnant. Nobody really knows what's going to happen here. Ted Lerner's death obviously complicates some things. There's other reasons, the TV deal, all that. Everybody's just kind of on pins and needles waiting, but I don't get the sense that anything is happening anytime soon.
Thank you for doing this, as always. Look forward to getting you back and talking to you when the season begins. Thanks.
You got it. Thanks, Kevin.
Mark Zuckerman, everybody. Ben Standing next. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. Audacy. Download it today.